it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Right, so I can't work out which one to do here. Do we do LIV Golf first, or we do Jake Fraser-McGurk first with Robert Craddock and tap his wisdom and experience? Let's go LIV Golf. So I watched a lot of this, particularly yesterday. It had the feel of, well, the President's Cup never quite has this feel. The Ryder Cup does. The rank barracking that was going on in the playoffs. So Adelaide did it again. Last year, the first hole-in-one on the party hole that LIV had experienced, and clearly the best scenes that were generated in their season. And then yesterday, for the first time, the team's playoff. And it included the home teams. So this was the Rippers of Australia versus the Stingers of South Africa. They go to what ends up being a two-hole playoff. And the barracking that's going on, very uncouth in the way that golf is typically observed. But when your brand is golf but louder, it very much fitted with what LIV is aspiring to be. The cheering of an opponent who couldn't get out of the bunker, the roaring for missed putts, anything to get Australia home. It's probably a reasonable word to say it was intoxicating, probably for obvious reasons. The whole week showed what the best golf looks like on Australian shores. It's a reminder to how mistreated we have been by the PGA Tour and those who have sided with the PGA Tour in Australia. I've never understood why our sympathies and loyalties would be anywhere near the PGA Tour. Top flight golf belongs in this country. It's always been cherished in this country and it thrives in this country. There's only one organisation prepared to bring it here, and that's LIV. And they have hit the jackpot 2 years running at the Grange.
Putts to win. Eddie's in.
Oh!
He taps it in anyway.
So Cam Smith for Team Ripper GC in the home event here at the Grange Golf Club in Adelaide. They stood up on the second playoff hole.
Ultimately, what a show of talent. Of true Aussie grit by this quality quartet who have served up a sensational day of golf here in Adelaide. The hopes of a golf mad nation squarely on their shoulders, and Ripper GC have performed magnificently for Australia.
It is a dream come true for us. I think we've been talking about it all year. It's one that we wanted to win, obviously, but I don't even know what to say. It's just so good.
That was the listening and the viewing. So the LIV coverage on Channel 7 and the LIV coverage on SEN from the final round. I found it gripping. I really enjoyed it. So the day was marked by terrific shot making from some of the best players in the world. And then at the end, it actually found its meaning in the team's tournament because the Australian team was part of it. Robert Craddock and I, we have obsessed over LIV, but not much of the actual golf across a couple of years. Crash, hello to you.
Yes, hello, Jared. It's an interesting one, isn't it? I found myself, when you were describing the highs and lows and the fours and against of LIV, even in the last couple of minutes, swinging both ways on it. You know, I don't love it. And I've got to say this. If they're in the middle of an AFL match, if a player or an umpire was hit on the back of a head by a water bottle, how would that have gone down?
Poorly.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we've just got to be careful that we don't, you know, automatically assume we're being really cool here and whatever by uncouth behaviour. So, but I also get what you say. We've been starved of good golf in this country, thanks to the PGA Tour, who make no apologies. They want to run everything. So, you know, LIV have come here and they've capitalised, and that's a great thing. But, yeah, I just see some of the behaviour. And I thought Adam Pengilly wrote quite a good piece today for Nine, just saying, like, at what point did this whole shoeys, obsession with shoeys and, you know, throwing, you know, objects onto a green, at what point does it become uncouth?
Yes, and I think there probably were moments along the way. I'm interested in the – so some of the shots that we got. When I was a kid, Crasher, I would go to Huntingdale for the Masters and follow Greg Norman and Nick Faldo, or Greg Norman and Curtis Strange. Top flight golf for generations had been routine in Australia, and then it was savagely ripped out. And now it's back with us, and 93,000 people – across the 3 days of the tournament will tell you that top flight golf belongs and thrives in Australia, but there's only one organisation prepared to do it.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I wonder, Jared, I'll bounce a theory off you, and I want you to tell me if you think it's true or false. I always reckon that at the Melbourne Cup at Flemington, if you stood near the exit gate and you did a poll asking how many people could identify the winner of the Melbourne Cup that day, I'm saying 1 in 10. Would that be right? And I reckon it might be the same at LIV Golf. Like, there was 90,000 people went there, and, you know, 30,000-odd on the last day. But do they go for the golf, or do they go for the party, like the Melbourne Cup at Flemington? Like, it's just... And good on them. Either way, you get people interested in the game, don't you? But it's different, isn't it? It's a different sort of vibe.
Yeah, I would probably dispute part of that theory. Is I think the vast majority would have gone for the golf and then had a great day. So how I would frame it would be this: is if you're not dearly into horse racing, there's a lot for you there, and you mightn't recall any of the horses, but there are household names on most holes here. So John Rahm, Louis Oosthuizen, Brooks Koepka, Cam Smith, as they sort of come through. You're watching Bryson DeChambeau, and then you've got Lee Westwood coming through, and Phil Mickelson, and Sergio Garcia. That's what struck me sitting on a hole in Vegas watching them all come through, was just how many household names are now in that field. And I think I felt watching on Friday, those shots where the galleries were gathered around Cam Smith, they were there for the golf, because Australia has been denied this for too long. And it's part of our natural sporting heritage was to have some of the great golfers in the world on our fairways. And I thought that reprised. That's where I do think there's a little bit of a difference.
Well, the one thing I will say, they have shopped beautifully. I mean, they've just got the names you care about. Like Phil Mickelson, I mean, what's he drifted to in the world now? You know, he could be on the seniors tour if he wanted it to be. But I'd really prefer to watch Mickelson than a lot of top 10 players in the world. Like, he's so creative and almost mesmeric, his shot making. And the same with guys like Sergio Garcia. He's not what he was, and a lot of these guys aren't. But they're still wonderful. And they're the guys who... Even if you dislike them, like Patrick Reed, is there a person in golf world that likes Patrick Reed? I haven't met them, but he's sort of captivating, and he's that man in the black hat. And I know that's why they wanted him, because, you know, they wanted heroes, they wanted villains, and they wanted people in between. They have shopped beautifully. And Cam Smith, I'm not surprised that he won the teams event yesterday, because he loves a crowd. He's a... You know, the crowds get him up, and he, you know, he loves talking to them, mingling with them, and he signed on for $150 million, but he's still the working class boy from the burbs in Brisbane at heart, loves a shoey and all that. So, yeah, it was a very, very interesting event. And as you say, 90,000, my goodness me, it's extraordinary. And we were a golf-starved nation. There's no question about that. And I saw Greg Norman said that it was something like 80% of people who went to the golf were 46 years or under. And, you know, so the young generation, which golf is so finding so hard to retain, because there's so many other ways that kids can spend their time and their money now, you know, they will be... That there'll be some sort of net thrown over them. It's from that point of view, it's good.
I think Liv, with particularly with Greg Norman's links here, this feels like the pinnacle of their season. It's a great course that they get to play on. They've had two knock it out of the park years. Last year with the hole in one on the party hole, which goes around the world, and then for the first time, a playoff in the teams event. They should be here more often. They should play three tournaments on their season here. They should play the Sandbelt in Melbourne. They should play the Brisbane or Gold Coast or Sydney. Is fish where the fish are. And the fish for this are in Australia.
Yeah, and as we said, don't underestimate the impact of that tournament. I mean, it was within a few weeks after the LIV tournament last year that the PGA thought, we've got problems here. This LIV Golf is in Adelaide and around the world is starting to take off. And that prompted the truce between them. So Adelaide has played a major role in reshaping the landscape of world golf. What that landscape looks like, ultimately, no one's quite sure because they've agreed to a truce, but they can't get together to find out what the road forward is. But they will come together eventually. And I don't mind them being apart for a while, actually. I quite enjoy the theatre of only coming together at the basically at the majors. I don't mind LIV players dropping down in the world rankings. You know, guess what? You're paid $100 million. You've got to have some sacrifice if you go to a rebel tour. But it's been, quite the spectacle.
I think, so did you care about the result yesterday in the playoff?
No.
I did.
Not at all. I was quite quietly hoping that Cam Smith got up just for him and the Australians, but not deeply invested in it. No, I can't. Nor Brendan Steele's win. And I watched a reasonable amount of it, but you did. You care?
Yeah, I was surprised how much I watched yesterday, but I couldn't turn it off. And I was emotionally engaged at the end and the change of channels from 7 to 7, mate. I felt crashed like Leishman and Smith played the first playoff hole like you and I would have, and then the South African pairing played the second playoff hole like you and I would have. So that was the only bit that disappointed me, because the quality of the golf had been excellent during the day, and the quality of the playoff wasn't nearly as good as it might have been, and it sort of missed the crescendo moment of the made putt at the end as Australia sort of snuck up on it and won with the rippers. But yeah, it surprised me. I don't think the President's Cup has ever been able to harness that, the barracking aspect to it, either for better or for worse, but the Ryder Cup has it every time you watch. It had it, and I understand the risks associated in the uncouth side, but I felt that at the end.
Yeah, and you know, Jerry, that's a big statement, because, you know, you're watching it without a vested interest, really, and just enjoying it. So, look, they I know that they do really enjoy coming to Australia and feeling that love. You know, there's been other tournaments where I saw a grab from one of their golfers. Who was it when they were playing overseas? He said, gee, there's no one here today, is there? And he said, no, that's why we're on the big bucks, mate, because we've got to be prepared to play in empty spaces, you know.
Yep.
And that was just, the guy didn't even know he's being taped, and that was from LIV overseas. Whereas that whole celebration of Adelaide and the going out to dinner together at Dignitaries of Adelaide, they all got off on it. So, no, good on them. It's worked well for him. But I just, for some reason, Jared, I just can't quite fall in love with it. You know, and may I say, they're both pretty easy to dislike, the PGA Tour, for what they've done to Australian golf, and live for other reasons. But for Adelaide, go and enjoy it. You know, you deserve it.
Here's Peter Malinauskas, the South Australian Premier, on the Today Show this morning.
I'm just so grateful. There were 94,000 fans down at Grange Golf Course over the course of the weekend. And the thing for me, Carl, that I'm so appreciative of, 40% of those people that were there were from outside of our state. Mm. Around the nation, people came here to see the world's best golfers, something that our country's been deprived of for way too long. So we appreciate what Greg Norman and Liv have done for Australian golf, and we're just really appreciative of people who have made the effort to put their hands in their pocket in a cost of living crisis and travel to Adelaide to enjoy it.
So the Premier values sport and has invested and is getting great dividends from it in South Australia at the moment. So the last aspect to this is the Olympics crash and Cam Smith. So we spoke about this a couple of weeks ago, and a few people who are deeply engaged in this pointed out that it's the International Golf Federation that runs Olympic selection, not each jurisdiction. So Australia doesn't get to choose the players that it takes. And they're wedded to the world rankings, which I couldn't be more stridently against. I do believe that a nation like Australia should really take a firm stance on this and go, no, we'll choose whoever the hell we want to represent Australia at the Olympics, as we do in most other sports. And the golf rankings no longer reflect the pecking order of golfers in our country, but it's outside of their hands for the time being.
Yeah, which should mean that Jason Day, who's in the 22nd, I think, in the world, goes. And the second one should be Minwoon Lee. If we're going on the rankings, who's in the mid-30s. And, of course, the mid-50s, you've got Cam Smith, who's dropped down there because the live events don't count towards world rankings. And Adam Scott, who didn't want to go anyway. What I do like about Smith is he wanted to go. You know, he and Day has already said he would go. So, yeah, it's... Oh, Jared, I don't hate this system, because if you join Live Golf, the rebel band, there have to be some sacrifices. And this is just one of them. This is just the Olympics. And, yeah, it's done in a world ranking system. And if you want to play outside that system, earn your money and no complaints. But if you want to play for 54-hole tournaments and whatever, that's fine. But I still find it hard to burst into tears of sympathy for anyone who misses out because they've joined Live. You know, there has to be, look, they thought they were going to be pariahs for years and years and never be welcome back. You know, that was what a lot of them felt. Phil Mickelson was, you know, treated like with absolute disdain. Now they're fine now, they're going well. But if it means missing the Olympics, well, that's the choice you made.
Yeah, you and I see this completely differently. It's Munchausen syndrome, I think, is for the International Golf Federations to be so wedded to the PGA Tour, I think, is appalling. And to not recognise the way that golf has spread out. And it will be, in a sporting sense, it will be a travesty that Cam Smith is not at the Olympics representing Australia. So that's... Yeah, well, and I'm getting more strident about that by the week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I must say he will feel the pain, because he came over here and he was at the Broncos. He was in the dressing room and he got showered with beer, which was good fun. I could tell he enjoyed. He loves all sports. You know, he's motor racing. He drives a hotted up old car when he comes back to Brisbane. So he's Mr. All Sports, and I could. I'm sure Cam would have loved to have sat in the Olympic Village and just, for lunch and just, chat to people there. It would have been great for him. But I've just got a feeling that he will be, by the time the Olympics get to Brisbane in 8 years' time, I've just got this feeling Cam will make a special effort to qualify. Liv will be at one with the PGA Tour and down at Royal Queensland, where he was previously a member. And a pennants player. Imagine that. Imagine playing the Olympics on the course where you once used to win pennant competitions on a Wednesday afternoon. That could be Cam Smith's fate in 2032.
All right. So that's Live Golf. I'll share some of your thoughts as we go. Jake Fraser-McGurk, that discussion is coming next. Brett from Box Hill is not the only one to have texted this through. Apologies, Jared. Tuned out for 15 to watch Jake Fraser-McGurk. Wow. Wow, indeed, is if you haven't had the time, make the 20 minutes during the day. Watch it as live on KO. Don't watch the mini. It doesn't quite do justice to what happened. What is the ripple effect if we just saw the revolution? The wisdom and experience of Robert Craddock.
You've got to look at the player in that he's had very limited experiences and exposure. So he's learning on the run. You know, every game he's playing, he's learning. Every training session he's having, he's rubbing shoulders with his coach, Ricky Ponting, who's an Australian icon. He's in the same dressing room as, Rishabh Pant. Tristan Stubbs is another young, budding power hitter. So it's an incredible environment for learning. So he's only going to get better, this guy. But that's something about his mindset, though, which is the most impressive thing, is that, you know, when you have a shooting star like this, quite often they start reading their own press and, you know, get a little bit distracted. I know we're still very early in this journey, but he's only kept his head down and be true to his authentic self, and that is take the game on from ball one and play fearlessly.
Tom Moody on the ESPN discussion surrounding Jake Fraser-McGurk and what he's doing in the IPL. So I referenced a bit of this at the top of the program. He's 247 runs off 104 balls in the five innings, twice 15-ball half centuries, 22 fours, 22 sixes. The scoreboards have caught on. McGurk going berserk at the frantic peak of it. He had his team after five overs at none for 89, of which he'd made 78 from 24 balls. He is, the analytics are astonishing. This is home run hitting. So he's faced 104 balls in the IPL. He's tried to hit 77 of them to the boundary. 44 times he's been successful. Five times he's gone out. So his aggression percentage is 74%. The competition average is 39%. There's not another player who's nudging 60%. Is this the revolution right in front of us? Crash, were you watching on Saturday night?
Yeah, I was, because I saw some text and I switched over. And look, it's batting of an ilk. Well, I'm not sure we've seen the likes of before, Jared. And he's, for me, he just should be opening all the time, because just with the field up and this huge swing that he has, this golf-like sort of, and with beautiful balance, may I add, I just think that's where, and he can slip into fourth gear. And sometimes he crashes the car, and other times they sail over the fence. But it's a very clear mantra. So that's what I would do with him. And but, yeah, it's just, look, I believe last week when they had a rough list of the 15 players in the World Cup, Jake Fraser-McGurk's name was not on it. Now, so that would require them to go back and rethink it before it's confirmed later this week. And that's very possible, that innings of 80 off 30-odd balls against Mumbai attack featuring Jasprit Bumrah, if you don't mind, you know, the world's greatest white ball bowler, who, may I say, kept his figures okay, four overs for about 35. But I so hope they do rethink it. It's difficult to see who's going to miss out. But, Jared, I see like a... I just feel Australian cricket at the moment, they need a Harley Reid. They need a Reece Walsh from the Broncos, this young kid who's so popular that when he was playing away against the West Tigers on Saturday night, the ball boys wore Reece Walsh socks, yes, even though he's the opposition. That was a beautiful moment for rugby league. And I think in a reasonably stagnant time where we keep the, not stagnant, but we're conservative time, where we tend to keep an older group of players together, I would love to see this fresh young soul swan into the West Indies and the USA in June in the World Cup. And just, you know, if he succeeds, he will be one of the most influential cricketers in Australia instantly for the young generation, who look up and they think, do you know what? It might take me forever to get into a test team, but if I learn how to really hit hard, I might go places in T20 in, you know, a year.
So all the best batters are in the world in T20 cricket are gathered in one place, playing in the same conditions, and Fraser-McGurk is outperforming them. So I just don't see. I totally understand the long range, and Australia had been full of insight and foresight in bringing him into the international squad over the summer, and he wasn't going to be in the T20 World Cup. I just think that changes. It feels like a rhetorical question for me as to whether he's in the World. Of course he's in the World Cup squad now. He's blasted his way in the conditions like for like.
Yep.
So it's not going to be the same in the West Indies, and that comes down to whether you actually select him. But I just feel like our answer.
Well, I tell you what, as of late last week, he was not in the squad. He was not in the squad, but the squad hadn't been finalised. But the 15 names, let's say they were written in pencil, there was no Jake Fraser-McGurk. However, surely they would have had a rethink. It's, it's an interesting one, because you then say, who misses out, Jared? And See, Steve Smith for me is not there anyway. I think he's gone. I don't think Jake Fraser-McGurk is replacing Steve Smith. Steve Smith for me didn't make it. So someone said to me, Josh Inglis, but I just think it's so hard to get players to the West Indies. And if something happened to Matthew Wade the day before a game, you do need a backup keeper. And I know he's probably mightn't even get a start, but it's not as if it's in New Zealand or even in Australia. You know, it's a long way. So you get to Matt Short. Now, for me, he's the guy, Jared. He's the guy who would have been written in pencil last week because he not only is a good batsman, but he can bowl spin as well. But I just think you've still got, apart from Zampa, you've got Maxwell that can bowl spin, Travis Head that can bowl spin. So who is going to win you a match out of Short or the debonair, tightrope walking cavalier Jake Fraser-McGurk? You know, so to me, it'll be that sort of decision. But I never thought, people have been talking to him the last few weeks, have never thought it's a formality that he was going.
Yeah.
But he's not, but I just so, I mean, I think that, you know, I hope they reassess it and take him, which, as you said, just makes total common sense for all sorts of reasons. And the little splash of romanticism's there for me. Just love the thought of a kid coming in like this. I think the Australian game needs this sort of story.
Yeah, I think cricket selection is typically governed by wise heads, conservatism, always default to pecking order and consistency. But every now and then there's a moment that is just irresistible for vision and intuition. Believe what you're seeing, harness the raw power of it. That's the future of T20 cricket. I truly think he is revolutionising what his stance, his weight, his bat position, his fearless and fearsome hitting, which is far beyond what others on the richer contracts are doing at the moment. Why would you deny yourself that? That it could be the difference at a World Cup when everybody's still napping on it.
Yeah, and you asked me a question last week, which I gave an answer to, and I heard Usman Khawaja give a better answer to it on the back page when you sort of said, can he progress to Test cricket, Fraser-McGurk? And when Tony Squires asked that to Usman on the back page in Fox Sports, he said, yeah, but he said, what is Test cricket these days? With baseball and all this, you get reverse laps going for six. He said, the game is changing. And he said, he can be part of that evolution. Very good point. Very good point. Like when I switch on, I think of Test cricket, Jared. Sometimes I think of the 1990s or the, you know, the 2000s. But yeah, it is changing and he can be part of that change. So it was a good answer from Khawaja because that's right. Test cricket now is not what it was 20 years ago. And in 10 years from now, it'll have changed again. So oh, look, he's got a first class average of 18. As we said, that is poor. He hasn't worked out red ball cricket yet. He hasn't done it. But as Greg Capel always says, I'd much rather have fourth gear and be trying to work out first and second than the other way around.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Crash, let's finish with the Brisbane Lions in your neck of the woods. You've been on alert. You've been concerned. Are you even more so now?
Yeah, I am. I am. And you know what, Jared? Occasionally you see a story, and I don't put myself up there as an AFL expert or anything like that, but sometimes your strength can ultimately be your weakness. And that story about the Chris Fagan's great faith in his players, only a couple of debutants over the last couple of years, and the preliminary final team from 2020, 13 of those players playing the other night when they lost. You know, he's been so faithful, hasn't he? And that's been his strength. He's made blokes, you know, feel comfortable in themselves and their positions. But here's the problem. You do grow old together. And if you don't put new blood in, sometimes you fall off a cliff together. And is that what's happening, Jared? You're a better judge than me?
It could be. It could be the sheer toll of it all for the time being. I don't think it's the end point, but I think it's going to be really hard to get out of this season.
I've got to say this. In all sports, sometimes you just need new faces in just to keep your, you know, liven you up, different discussions, unscarred by previous things happened last year, you know, like just, it's not a bad thing. So, but good on him. And I know Chris is so loyal in when he got there, even to assistant coaches who they all thought, oh, I'll get the punt now. He said, no, I'm going to keep you. He's that sort of guy. But, yeah, it looks pretty darn grim at the moment. And and as if that grand final last year against Collingwood was the collective high point of a generation of players.
Crash, terrific. I enjoyed our chat so much. I've totally lost my bearings here and missed the news. Crash, terrific. Talk to you next week.
Hey, don't worry. I'm getting like that myself. Is it fifth night tonight, Jared? I'm getting old. See you, mate.
The wisdom and experience of Robert Craddock.